From WLVR Bethlehem and Lehigh University, this is the show that gets you behind the real lives of Lehigh faculty. This is Prof Talk.
This is WLVR Bethlehem, 91.3 FM, coming at you live. This is Prof Talks, your favorite show, only on WLVR. Today's a very special episode. We have alumni Mike Malcuso, who is the CEO of Global Access, class of 83, and Harrison Abrams, who is an associate for Global Access. How are you guys doing today?
Doing all right.
Glad to be here.
That's great. So can you tell me a little about yourselves?
Yeah, so I graduated Lehigh as a philosophy major in 1983, went to law school, did an international business, started my own company about 4 years ago, and we're growing terrifically across our regions, which is our global business, and are now in a position to hire Lehigh students. And so I've come back to talk to the college and the students in the college about potential jobs.
I've been with Global Access for about a year and 8 months now. My background, I went to the University of Chicago, graduated from undergraduate in 2013. Since then, I did a little bit of management consulting, M&A for financial services firms, largely big banks. And I've been doing kind of associate work, and I lead the analysts and the intern program at Global Access.
That sounds very interesting. So, Mike, can you tell me, how did you start Global Access? What gave you the inspiration?
The inspiration came from, you know, our clients and the changing global environment and that they're facing every day. They have challenges across the companies, both if they want to expand, plus the competition they face. More and more of my work was advising them across their needs, as opposed to with respect to one particular need. And that gave me the idea for Global Access.
So what gave you, this is a question for you, Harrison, what got you into consulting?
Well, when I was in college, I had a number of different internships, and they were all kind of around business and finance. But everything was more on the finance side. And as much as I loved the experiences and what I learned from, you know, options trading, mortgage-backed securities trading, and your typical asset management, it wasn't close enough to operating and running a successful business as I wanted to get. It was financing. And as exciting as it was, I knew it was just one piece, one dimension of kind of a larger way of running a successful business in a Global Access. We're not bound by any of those regulatory constraints, and we can do a wider variety of things with a wide variety of companies. And really, that learning experience is what brought me in.
So since you guys didn't start off with business degrees, did you learn by doing, like making a bunch of mistakes, or did you have a mentor of some sort?
The answer to that question is yes. With the undergraduate degree at Lehigh, and I assume at other schools as well, but particularly here, is really a good start to a good foundation on which many different kinds of buildings can be built. And while I started in philosophy, I was able to follow my interest into other fields. And the mentoring, I think we ought to talk about a little bit, because I think Lehigh is unique in the amount of mentoring that its professors do for its students, and really, really benefited from that while I was here, and then really had mentoring relationships even outside my various jobs. So nobody stands alone, but a Lehigh degree, particularly in the arts college, and some good mentoring together is really what started my career.
At coming from kind of another liberal arts school, without kind of getting, you know, in college into what you're doing, and it's really more about what you're learning in a specific subject, a lot of it for me came from outside experiences and mentorship. I'd say the first mentor that I really had that got me towards business was my dad. He was a trader, and he does run a small business, and it was always exciting to see the different facets and how that works. And I've had, you know, other mentors along the way. I played tennis at the University of Chicago. I had a great coach, and even though it isn't quite academic and it's not business, I mean, the same mindset, the same kind of determination still applies. And that all of that together is really business is about profits, and profits aren't too different from winning. So all of the same stuff there. I mean, a holistic approach to running a successful business has been, from a wide variety of angles, really helpful.
From one ex tennis player coming to another, I totally get where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. Varsity for 3 years.
Yeah.
It's not the same as college, but like the message still stands.
Mm-hmm.
So did you guys go to business school or not?
So I ended up going to law school. Mm. And then eventually added a business degree, but that wasn't why I went to graduate school, but it's where I ended up.
Going to a little bit about the market, you're located in New York City. Did you choose that place intentionally because it is like the cultural melting pot of the world, or that's just what happened?
Well, I think that's a question I haven't been asked very much, if at all, so I appreciate that question. It's very interesting. But we launched this business, Global Access, as an international / global business from the very start. So we opened in several markets simultaneously. So we opened in New York and in Minneapolis and in Hong Kong and in Hanoi and in Abu Dhabi. And we picked those places because we believe that those are, as you put it, cultural melting pots, but they're also very active in global business. These are places where people would look to for expertise in solving global issues. Not the only places, but certainly some of the centers. And we had good client demand for working with us in those particular areas, in those cities.
How has the digitalization of, I guess, the digital age really affected your business? Or I'll rephrase that question. How has new technology affected your business?
That's another very interesting question, because our business is the result of new technology. It's also being driven by 21st century technology, and we spend a lot of time assisting our portfolio companies who are often in the technology space. So let me start with the first one. It's driven by technology because it's the revolution in microcomputing since the 1980s that makes it possible for businesses such as ours to become the businesses that we are, because we combine the old style of consulting and investing, so with the new sort of platform business that, say, an Uber or an Amazon has, a very, very globally connected, very light on our feet. And that would not have been possible without the microtechnology. And in terms of our portfolio companies, but we really like companies that are in the business of, for instance, application of technology in a particular sector, such as agriculture, such as financial services, such as healthcare.
So why not start up like most startups at Silicon Valley?
I think there's nothing wrong with starting up in Silicon Valley, but we're not a technology-only California-centric type business. And we believe that outside of Silicon Valley, there are so many pockets of great companies and great needs and great startups that we were better served outside of Silicon Valley. Doesn't mean we wouldn't look at a Silicon Valley business. The other side of it, too, is that our business tends to be in partnership with global brands and larger existing companies, and not so much in the startup space. When it comes to technology, we have some startups, but a lot of our technology business is with larger companies that need to deploy technology in a certain way.
So how do you look into new markets that you want to invest in?
I think we look at Harrison. And I'm not being facetious, because we do a lot of work. And I think, Harrison, maybe you want to comment on that.
Yeah, studying new markets, whether that means a new country that we haven't done business in, or that, well, Michael's done business in too many countries to count, but ones we're less familiar with, and markets and industries that we're less familiar with, we still look at all of that stuff. We might not be in it now, but we look into everything. And part of that is kind of staying open and having kind of a continuous knowledge base on all of the markets, all of the industries, and especially how they're changing. A place like Vietnam, for example, I mean, it's on the edge of developing nations. It's a great population, and, you know, we're aware, and we're always looking for new businesses there, places to get involved. We also look at, you know, a place like North Africa. You don't think about investment in North Africa a lot. You think of the Middle East, but there's tons of opportunities.
Can you describe me a little bit of your thought process when researching?
Sure. Depending on what industry, right? I mean, there's hotbeds all over the world for each industry, for each market. So for something like healthcare, we look at where do people have health problems and where can they actually afford to fix them? What countries have the right healthcare set up to actually help their citizens fix those problems? I mean, it's great to see that there's need for preventive cardiovascular disease, and that diabetes is, you know, worldwide, that there's a lot of opportunity, but that doesn't necessarily mean we can come with a solution just about anywhere.
Totally made me lose my train of thought. That was just a very good answer.
Thank you.
What new technologies are you looking into to kind of help your business grow, if anything?
Well, we are a user of technology, so we're not, as a firm, in terms of our own platform development, we don't innovate on that. We use the latest platforms and technologies available and to grow our own business. But when we look at our portfolio companies, we spend a lot of time analyzing what business they're in, what technology they're deploying, you know, what that technology might mean for future development, whether it would, what impact it would have on the markets. And frankly, our analyst team is very integral to that. And so in addition to the country research that they do for us, they also spend a lot of time keeping us on top of developing technologies and markets related to those technologies, so that when we do our analysis, our intake on new potential businesses that we might invest in, we're already very far up the curve in the sectors that we're interested in.
How important is data and raw information into that analysis?
It's really everything. And frankly, we create a lot of the data, because the data is, so we have to be careful that we have, you know, we've done our homework carefully so that we understand the data sets that we're getting, and we understand the markets we're going into, and we understand the countries and cultures we're doing business in. But beyond that, we have to take an assumption about what the possibilities are in 3 years, in 5 years, you know, in 7 years, to see how we might build that out and what role we could play in the build out. I'd call that proprietary data, because we do take a view on that before we make an investment in a particular business.
Yeah. So I work with a lot of the analysts and the interns that are really kind of the number crunchers behind everything that we do. And data is king for every project. I mean, I just talked about kind of keeping a continual knowledge base about a wide variety of industries and markets. That's all done through data. We're aggregating data from economic sources like the World Bank, from the IMF, and then other sources, the usual financial ones, Capital IQ, Bloomberg, all of that stuff together with good minds analyzing it. There's a lot of power behind the data, and it gives you a very good insight into a variety of industries and markets.
I'd just like to add to that in addition to data-driven analysis, we also do a lot of qualitative analysis.
Do you mind elaborating on that?
Well, it's one thing to understand, you know, the direction the data it tends to take you. It's another thing to take an opinion about whether you can affect those streams and change the data flow, or you can improve on it, or you can find the technology, or you're working with a company that has a different ballgame. And really, to understand that is not just a data-driven project. It's also really about the environment. And the environment is not just the business environment or climate in a particular company, but it's also the region or the country they're working in. So, for instance, a company working in a more developed market will have a certain set of opportunities, a less developed market, a different set of opportunities. And we evaluate all of that alongside the data as we get it.
You are listening to Prof Talks only on WLVR Bethlehem, 91.3 FM.
Recently, there has been a insurgence in data-driven journalism, biology, psychology, pretty much any subject you can think of. Why do you think that is?
Well, that's also a very interesting question. I think partly it's done because it can be done. Right? We now have the technology that can dump a lot of data on our doorsteps. But the old adage that existed when computers first became popular and microtechnology started getting ever stronger and faster is true today as it was in those days. Garbage in, garbage out. Right? You can take a lot of data and you can use a lot of methodology to analyze the data. But at the end of the day, it's the combination of the analysis the team does, the qualitative analysis, and the data that really gets you where you need to go. And then, if I may say so, I also think there's a danger in all that data. And that is that you make the data say what you want. You hear from the data what it is that you want it to say, rather than let the data speak kind of as the data itself. Because, you know, when you have large sets of data, you can draw lots of different conclusions and analyses from it. And I don't think we're advanced enough yet to kind of let the data just speak on its own and allow it to drive us to the conclusions. But we'll see.
That's interesting that you pointed up about drawing different conclusions from data. There's been kind of this fear that people can manipulate data and information to kind of prove their point, like ad companies or whatever. So how do you think we can prevent this?
Well, I don't think it needs to be prevented. I think that data is being used by people to the ends that they want to use the data for. And there's inherently nothing wrong with that. I think that we have to have an educated enough populace on the, on the individual side and enough smart analysts on the business side to be able to draw our own conclusions from the data. I mean, the analysis somebody else draws from a data set, for instance, for us is just another data point, right? And then we will look to see if other people have also drawn conclusions from a particular data set, and then we'll make up our own minds as to what we think that data says to us. And in the end, we have to make a decision because we have to either make the investment or not make the investment.
And like any other market, I mean, competition in this market's good too, right? You can definitely look at a huge data set and you can come up with your answer. But hopefully, a bunch of other people are analyzing that same data set. And you can just hope that, you know, that variety of conclusions, well, you can only hope that it converges. With a lot of people doing a lot of analysis on the same data, better chance of getting the right answer.
Since most data is publicly available, do you think companies would provide, like, the world their data that they collected, or...
Well, it depends on what they're using it for. If they're using it because they have their own unique conclusions that allows them to, in essence, base part of their business on it, it's unlikely that they're going to share it in that format. Well, they might provide the raw data. But it's also too general to just talk about data sets because data can be different things for different businesses, and some businesses are super data-driven, and trading shops, for instance, use a lot of data, and they try to make money on differences that they see in data sets. Our business isn't like that. We're very long-term investors. We make our investments and we work with our portfolio companies on the consulting side, on our advisory side, to help them build their businesses. And so we use data really to set direction, to help find the right places to make investments. But we don't trade, so we don't have short-term uses for the data.
Yeah, we're using data to make more educated decisions. And like Michael said before, there's more than just the numbers. You can look at the numbers of, for example, tourist attractions in China. And the numbers are interesting, but what you won't figure out from just the numbers is the way those tourists get there are totally different than they would in the U.S. They'll come on a bus. They'll come in a tour package. They won't come like we do. So when you're trying to run that business, as helpful as the data is, you need to know that if you're, you need to know that you're marketing to people that are going to get on a bus altogether and they're going to plan their trip that way instead of this way. So the data is great, but it's within a certain confine, and the rest of the experience and the cultural differences, that's not always in numbers. It's rarely in numbers.
So for someone going into finance, would you preach kind of studying numbers and data more, or actually like studying from textbook finance?
Well, it's hard to say, having not studied traditional finance myself. But in economics, there's plenty of numbers, right? The math component is there. Learning how to work with numbers, learning how to work with data, it's not that different.
So I agree with Harrison on that. Finance is not a single thing. It's a multifaceted undertaking. And I think working in teams with people with different skill sets, some of which are financial and math driven, some of which are qualitative and culturally driven, people with different backgrounds and language skills, for our business, that's an absolute must.
So do you believe, while in managing, getting away from the data topic, do you believe in hands-on micromanaging or kind of a laissez-faire approach?
So I don't necessarily believe in either. I'm a strong believer in hiring the best people, the smartest people, world-class people who have the potential, and the younger people have the potential of becoming world-class in their fields, people who have a strong desire to, and a strong work ethic. End of the day, no matter how interesting or sexy our business looks, it is 100% dependent on the talent, skills, innovation, and abilities of our people. And frankly, also the ethics and the transparency of our business. And we take great pains to find people that are literally the smartest, engaged, hardest working people we can find, who really want to deeply find solutions to problems.
What type of skill sets would you need to hire someone? Because you said it yourself, you were a philosophy major yourself. So are you looking for more of like what they have done in the past or just their academic achievements?
So it would depend on what level we're hiring for and what part of the business. But if we're looking at, say, an intern program at a university, say Lehigh, we're not looking for prior experience from our interns. And what we're really looking for is those people that I talked about just a minute ago, smart, engaged, willing to work hard, looking for solutions, tenacious, but I don't need this particular skill set. We want to look at a diverse group of people with diverse backgrounds and diverse histories and potentially different language skills to build a team that together can produce much more than any single person. And we believe that the liberal arts backgrounds in particular, we have also people with non-liberal arts backgrounds, but people with liberal arts backgrounds in particular also bring a unique perspective from the various disciplines that they study that will add to the total picture that we can construct of a particular thing that we're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, people who are who work at a high level, there's no major for that, right? Smart people come out of every block, every shape of life, every shade. So, I mean, it's about hard work and kind of an affinity for numbers sometimes for most of us. But there's no special sauce. Smart people come from everywhere.
Because this is a Lehigh radio station, and I have to ask, how do you think Lehigh has changed since you graduated?
Well, I've been back a couple of times. I mean, maybe more than a couple of times now, because I'm trying to create this internship program, you know, not just our company kind of out there on its own, but you know, together with the college. And I have to say the changes at the university seem very positive to me. Even more diverse student body, more different majors, new buildings and investment in new schools, and still that same kind of Lehigh cohesiveness and school spirit that was always here. And one of the things that I always liked when I was here was the faculty to student ratio, and the fact that while it was a good research institution, it was also a great teaching institution, and professors who spend a lot of time with their students. And I think that's still true today from what I hear. And I think that's one of the real benefits for students being at Lehigh in the first place.
So since because of the recent expansion or announced expansion of the College of Health and Business School, where do you think, if you were in charge, that you would increase and why?
Well, I don't know enough about what they're doing and in terms of the health program, but I have watched the business program grow from its initial roots to, you know, a very well-regarded, really globally well-regarded business program. So my view would be that if the university has made a commitment to healthcare, that while it'll start slowly, it will have the same goal of building, you know, a Lehigh quality healthcare school. And because part of our business is healthcare oriented, in fact, it's one of our five focus areas. And Lehigh has both the technology side and the healthcare side in the future. I think, you know, it just was means an expanded intern program from our side.
I did think it was also fitting how you set up this previous meeting through the College of Arts and Sciences versus the business school.
Well, I believe that. So we tried at first a couple years ago to interview students more generally, and we had mostly business students sign up. And I'm not sure why that's the case. And of course, we always welcome business students, and we hire a lot of business students. But also because of my own history with the college, wanted to create some opportunity for students from the college, and I thought if they weren't going to come to me, I would come to them.
That also gets more, that weeds out the more active students versus the inactive students.
Well, that's true. That is true. The fact, though, is that with young people, sometimes you have to just provide the opportunity more viscerally, put it more in front of them, because there's many people there that if they can see it more directly, they might apply for something that they wouldn't if they just saw it on a flyer or something else. And so we wanted to make it a more personal experience for the college.
So if you're a student like me, you have no idea what you want to do with your life. So what advice would you have for someone like me who's kind of struggling, maybe based on personal experience or anything?
Well, I would say that if you actually knew what you were going to do at your age, you'd be the rare case. And frankly, being at Lehigh gives you the opportunity to do exploring relative to the kinds of things that you might want to do and might end up doing. And frankly, an internship with a program like ours, I could help you refine your focus because, you know, in the different sectors that we're in, and you could see how a college of arts and sciences degree, you know, can fit into the modern marketplace, and, you know, how important we believe, you know, the contributions are from those students. I think that will give you another way of focusing on the things you might be interested in.
I would say my biggest suggestion is to close no doors. Leave everything open and ask as many questions as possible. A lot of what I do, like Michael said, is research. And in doing vast research, you learn about a lot of things that you're really interested in that you didn't know existed. So you have to keep everything open.
Where do you see Global Access going, like increasing, expanding?
Well, we have been on an incredible growth journey. So let me just make a couple of comments just to kind of frame the business. Because what we don't do is we don't act like a private equity firm and make tons of investments in across a big platform and hope some of them do well. We take a portfolio approach to our companies. We get very deeply engaged with them. We become partners with them. We often take a very significant position in their companies, And then we use our advisory services and our analysts and so forth to help those companies build their businesses. So in the end, we have almost like a closed-end mutual fund, a portfolio of owned businesses that we're helping to grow. And we expect to help those companies, not just for a year or two, but for many years, and be engaged with them in many different ways. So when we talk about our growth, our platform is going to grow naturally just because our companies are growing. But we continue to add new businesses to our platform very judiciously as we build out our own infrastructure. But global is definitely the key. So we want to be deeper in the markets we're already in as we grow the business.
And for anyone looking into getting into, whether it's investing or arts or whatever, what would you recommend?
I would recommend that they try it out, right? With an internship, there's many firms, including ours, that have terrific internship programs. And internship way is sort of a low-cost way for you to try something out because they typically run from 2 to 3 months. Our firm, we run our internship program continuously, so we have every 3 months we have a new class of interns potentially. So we allow students can try out something. Sometimes students stay with us for a long time. We had one intern, actually several interns now, who stayed with us for more than a year.
Is there anything you'd like to add or anything you'd wish I asked that I hadn't?
No, I would say that the Lehigh experience has been a terrific experience for me. Coming back now all these years later, and being able to be part of the college again, even though in a different way, and working with the college to find a way to provide internships to these terrific students that it has, I think is a great thing for us, and it's hopefully very useful to the school and the students.
This is my first time here, and it's really exciting to see the university, the expansion, the innovation that's going on. We like expansion and innovation. And I'm looking forward to coming back again and getting to know how deep the talent here really is and getting to know, the student body better and finding some really, really awesome interns.
We love having you guys and always welcome your return. Just wanted to say. Is there any way to research your company, a website or a phone number, email of any sort?
Well, we do have a website. It's www.globalaccesscsg.com.
Okay. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it. I really enjoyed having you both. Just want to remind the audience, this is Prof Talks only on WLVR, signing off.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Okay. I'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Prof Talk. To hear all the interviews and check out extended material, log on to our archives at WLVR.org.